This is Amanda Buckle. We're recording in Barcelona, Spain at Seafood Expo Global, and I am here with the team at Undercurrent breaking down everything that happened on the show floor on Tuesday, May 6th. But actually, we're going back because Barb was starting to work on Monday out here in Spain. So Barb, tell us what kind of event you went to yesterday and who you met with. We want to hear all about it.
So yesterday, or last night, a Canadian contingent met with some of their European buyers, all about cod, northern cod to be specific, which is that iconic cod stock that has such a history on the east coast of Canada. So they got together to rehash where things stand with the stock at this point, and it was their first meeting since the cod became a commercial fishery announced by the Canadian government last June. So they met and got an update on where things stand with that stock. They were very pleased by the news that the stock spawning biomass last estimate is now at about 524,000 metric tons.
All right.
Which is 61% more than 324,000 metric tons last year.
Finger snaps for that. That's great news.
So what's interesting too about that fisheries improvement project is it's supported by the companies that have been buying some of that Newfoundland cod. They're engaged in that not just as buyers but as supporters of science. So that was pretty cool.
Okay, yeah.
To hear that. And they're obviously very happy to see that the stock has increased. And their funding helps put things like, for the tech geeks out there, it helps put transmitters in codfish and receivers right along the coast of Newfoundland to collect the pings from the fish as they swim past these electronic fences.
Wow.
And get an idea of the migration pattern of cod.
That's amazing, that technology.
And that's helped Canadian scientists delve more into the data and have more data on cod. It was pretty cool for me too, because I remember I'll date myself here now, but back in 2001 or thereabouts, I was on the water with a Canadian scientist who was just testing that technology.
Wow. So to be able to come full circle and then to be in Barcelona to be hearing about the results.
Dr. John Brady, who is now retired, but he started this experiment where I live on Trinity Bay. And I remember back then he was hoping to get the receivers technology up to Twillingate.
That's pretty amazing to be able to come full circle with the reporting. Again, I just want to plug in Undercurrent's expertise that you've been reporting on this since, I'm sure, before 2001, Barb. But and I always like to plug in that, like, I was following your work before I joined Undercurrent News. So even just to be sitting here in a room with you now talking is like, you know, like, I love geeking out with you. This is fantastic. But so that was a great way to kind of kick off, you know, Barcelona. That was before Seafood Expo Global even kicked off. Now, today, we're at 5 o'clock. We got an hour left still on the show floor. What are your thoughts on the first day? Did you spend a lot of time with your Canadian contacts?
Wandered the booths. Mm-hmm. For sure, I had a few conversations with a few folks. And what I noticed this year is that at last year's Seafood Expo Global, which was my first one, it seems that this year more Canadian companies have their own booths to increase exposure. I just noticed that Canadian Pavilion is located right next to the French Pavilion, right across the street from Norway. They're kind of in the European section, which is interesting because, of course, Canada is looking for sales of seafood in Europe to diversify its customer base.
Makes you wonder. I mean, I know, I'm sure these spots are set, you know, way ahead of time, but yeah, you can't ignore the coincidence of what's going on with the tariffs and that. So that is some interesting placement there on the show floor.
For sure. And I did see, even though we've been talking a lot about the impact of Chinese tariffs on the Canadian lobster industry in particular, I get the sense from the show floor that there's still a lot of business being done between Asian customers and Canadian suppliers, and I saw a lot of people from Asia wandering over to meet up with their suppliers and say hello and shake hands, and Canadian companies tell me that, yeah, the Chinese tariffs thing, we'll let the diplomats handle that, but for us, it's like supplier to customer, we're working at the deals and figuring out what works best for both of us.
So, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Again, this event couldn't have come at a better time. All right. Okay. Thanks, Barb. Be sure to follow Barb's content. It's posted on our live blog. You got original content also coming in. Follow her on LinkedIn. And if you're at the show floor, hunt her down.
I'm here.
On to contestant number two. We just heard from Barb about day one at Seafood Expo Global. And now here with us is Gary Morrison. Gary, you're generally on the price reporting side, and this is your first Seafood Expo Global. Am I correct?
That is correct.
So as a price reporter, as your first show, tell us about, you know, what you've been experiencing.
Yeah, so I think the scope and size of Seafood Expo Global really was the first thing I noticed. It was just a lot different than
coming
Boston.
Coming from Boston, exactly. Boston is one hall.
Yeah, so, I mean, five halls here, a really large space. I know Cliff talked about it on one of the last pods, but it's massive. And trying to find and connect with people is certainly the challenge for a first-timer like myself. But, you know, again, always great to connect, reconnect, and talk to all the people in the industry on the pricing side that, you know, I literally talk to on the phone weekly to get in front of them, to be in person. I think it's really impactful, and I think they appreciate it as well.
And now Undercurrent is expanding its price reporting. So are you doing any research? Are you looking for any contacts in a specific area? Can you tell me a little bit more there?
Yeah, I mean, we're certainly, you know, listening to the customers and giving them what they want. I know that in the coming weeks and months, we have some tuna assessments coming out. And I think that there's some other species that we're looking at for Q4. So we're certainly just trying to get a pulse of the industry, talk to, you know, contacts, and just see if there's anything that's missing and any gaps that we can potentially fill where there is a market need for it and that we can get robust and consistent information.
Okay. And now from, you know, the price reporting on your own side, you do lobster.
Yeah, so, you know, primarily do crab, lobster, frozen lobster tails and meat, and shrimp. So, you know, the primary places for lobster and crab now are Canada. There's certainly some other origins that we've been following. But, you know, shrimp is really where I'm having most of my discussions, especially around tariffs, right, because there's a lot of uncertainty out there, and there's certainly advantages given to some countries over others in the initial reciprocal tariffs. So the ones that were hit hardest were our Asian source countries, Indonesia, Vietnam, India. And then Ecuador was only hit with an initial 10%. So they certainly had a tariff competitiveness compared to those Asian countries. So it's really what's going to happen July 9th,
okay,
and how is the market going to react in terms of here in the U.S., it's what's consumers going to react to higher pricing that we've seen. And then is Ecuador going to continue to creep market share away from those Asian countries, given that they have competitiveness in the tariff situation, if it reverts back to what, you know, it was initially announced.
I'm here with Dan Gibson, Deputy Editor of the EU in Asia, and Cliff White, our Editorial Director. Guys, you were here in Barcelona on Monday working, but you were not at Seafood Expo Global. Tell us what event you guys were covering.
Every year, the day before Seafood Expo Global, the Norwegians hold themselves a pre-event, particularly the Norwegian salmon sector. Yesterday was the Euronext DNB seminar, and pretty much every salmon trader, producer, farmer, they were all in town at this hotel, the Intercontinental Hotel, to talk about what's going on with salmon prices and find out about, you know, the latest information. And what is going on is that prices are, for want of a better word, crashing. They are at an incredibly low ebb for this time of year. Normally April sees kind of a peak because you don't see much harvesting over winter. It's incredibly cold. That's the period when you're growing. You're growing the biomass. Most of the harvesting then takes place in the summer and later in the year. And that produces this very, there's almost a sine curve for prices over the year for Norwegian salmon. But this year, when it's supposed to be up, it is down. It is down at the level that they normally see only in October, November. It's roughly half of what it was at the same time last year. And what's happened is their measures that they've been taking to reduce mortality rates, to reduce sea lice attacks and all the rest of it, have proven so successful that they find themselves with 100,000 tons they expect this year, more than they had last year over the whole course of the year. So they have a lot more salmon, and demand has been flat. If anything, demand is slightly coming down because salmon is a pricey commodity and cost of living is high. So the question now from their point of view is, when is it expected to pick up? and we listened to, I think first was from Kontali. They said there's expected to be a bit of a drop back in production next year. Seawater temperatures right now are quite high, which isn't necessarily great for biomass growth. And in the meantime, though, Chile is expected to have huge production volumes itself over the second half of the year. So you're looking at probably around about 6% annual growth. And the industry hasn't seen anything like this for a good number of years. If anything, there's been far too few fish to meet the demand coming out of the US and China. And this year with the tariffs especially, suddenly the US is no longer the market that they thought it would be to, you know, take in all this remaining fish. And a lot of the fish is growing to big sizes, and that normally ends up in China, and the Chinese aren't buying much either. So,
perfect storm.
Yes, they have a lot going on. You say a perfect storm, you don't even know the half of it yet. Because in Norway, just a few weeks ago, the government announced this, what will be the most revolutionary change to the way in which they license salmon in the country, and particularly salmon growth. Up till this point, they have what's known as a maximum allowed biomass license. And that's dictated by the volume of sea lice that you find on the wild salmon populations in the area. And they call it the traffic light system. So essentially, if there's too many lice, then production growth is stymied. And if you meet the requirement, which I think is down at 5% mortality caused by sea lice from farmed salmon, then you're allowed to grow. And currently, the only places that have this green light are in the north, so they're the only ones allowed to grow. But the current government has decided they are instead going to introduce sea lice quotas, which will mean that effectively the volume you produce is capped only by the limitations of the site. So you could see huge increases in production in certain areas, but in the meantime they need to meet their sea lice quota, okay, which is in the short term going to mean very hefty reductions, most likely in the south of the country. Now it should be mentioned this is only a proposal. It's going to take a good 2-3 years, they reckon, to ever see the light of day if it will actually ever be implemented, but it's all everyone in the industry and always talking about. And of course, this comes at the same time as they're already seeing a lot of downward pressure on prices. So it's rampant for speculation right now what the future holds for Norwegian salmon.
Wow. All yeah. right. Cliff, any thoughts from that event?
It was a lot to absorb. Yeah. It was like you said, a perfect storm. And there was an economic overview of pretty much how U.S. tariffs and the American political machine is changing how seafood is traded globally, and a lot of scared Norwegian faces in that room.
Now, Cliff, you've been walking the show floor today. Were there a lot of scared faces that you saw elsewhere when you talked about tariffs?
Not as many scared faces as I thought
okay.
there would be. The seafood industry has always proven itself to be resilient.
I think COVID proved that well, yep.
Right, and I think a lot of people are looking back at their experience getting through COVID as a sign of the seafood industry will prevail or at least survive. But I think more companies than I expected are expecting to be okay through this. For sure, it's changing their business model slightly. I spoke to one Ecuadorian shrimp exporter who said they're shifting like 60% of their volume from China to the U.S. because Ecuadorian tariff rates are favorable compared to Asian shrimp producers. So that's a massive shift for a medium, large-sized company. But I didn't speak to too many people who are panicking. Everyone seems to have handled the hit so far, and they're just kind of waiting to see if Trump is going to drop another bomb on them. But for right now, everyone's holding tight and feeling okay about things for the most part.
All right. Undercurrent will have more from our team of reporters in a second podcast coming on Wednesday. And you can continue to read all our coverage on the live blog that's posted directly on the front page of the site, and plus all our original content going through. So follow us on LinkedIn, follow us on Facebook, X. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.